go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Let's see, what does that deliriously beautiful countdown clock read right at this very instant? Why, it reads 17 hours, 58 minutes, and 30 seconds before we bid an unfond farewell to George W. Bush and send him packing. I still wonder if he's going to sneak out the back door of the White House the way he snuck in. You can't help but wonder that. I was over at Crooks and Liars earlier today, and I couldn't help noting they put up some video from a little clip from Fahrenheit 911. You know, the Michael Moore vehicle. And it talked about what a sad and sorry inaugural it was when that hateful man was hoisted upon our country, despite our best efforts to keep him from being hoisted upon us, you know, voting to keep that from happening. But this is 8 years that we're all born out of thievery. I still say that Sandra Day O'Connor's tombstone, when the day comes, should read, "Screwed America, gave us Bush." You know, it's hard to get around. But this is also a very, very important holiday. It is, of course, January the 19th, and that means that it is Martin Luther King Day in America. It is a federal holiday. It is a state holiday. I think all 50 states recognize it now, although John McCain and Arizona and some of the weirdos out there had to be dragged kicking and screaming into it. It is a day for noting profound change in this country. It is also a day for noting profound loss. For the day that shots rang out in the spring in Memphis, and took a very young man, Dr. King, away. We think in terms of the I Have a Dream speech. We think in terms of, at least I do, and I know many of you do, quite frankly, the most profound speech he ever made, and that was the Riverside Church speech of 1967, a year to the day from when he would be murdered. And last night, in the course of sharing some time with John Fox on his program, which was a real hoot, all Foxed Up, Sunday nights, 9 p.m. to midnight, we ran a little over last night, but, you know, these things happen because we don't have a horn section anymore, and there's just so much to be said and done and enjoyed. But I read something last night, and I'm going to read it again in case you weren't there. And I read this because I've been thinking in terms of inaugural events, inaugural milestones, inaugural things that ought to be at an inauguration. And well, let me do this with a bit of a preface. When John Kennedy was inaugurated in 1960,
He invited Robert Frost to come and read. And Robert Frost read this poem. It's called The Gift Outright. The land was ours before we were the land's. She was our land more than 100 years before we were her people. She was ours in Massachusetts, in Virginia, but we were England's, still colonials, possessing what we still were unpossessed by, possessed by what we now no more possessed. Something we were withholding made us weak until we found out that it was ourselves we were withholding from our land of living, and forthwith found salvation in surrender. Such as we were, we gave ourselves outright. The deed of gift was many deeds of war. To the land vaguely realizing westward, but still unstoried, artless, unenhanced. Such as she was, such as she would become. Robert Frost. 86 years old, he read that in freezing cold and would die not too much long afterward. And that's a good starting place. That made sense in the context of the inauguration of John Kennedy. By the way, inauguration, do you know the meaning of the word? It comes from the auguries. That is, the reading of the magical entrails of some sacrificed beast. It was something that happened in ancient Rome. It was performed on momentous occasions, such as the rise to office of a new consul, or in later years, a Caesar. And some poor beast would be slaughtered. In many cases, it was a bull. And the Pontifex Maximus, who dressed surprisingly similar in many ways to the current Pontifex Maximus, would then plunge his elbows deep into the gore of the innards of said bull and declare whether the omens were good or ill. The auguries. And these were done, as I said, upon accession to office of some person of note. And hence, in the formation of this country, we determined that because so much of what we did with the structure of this government was a direct lift from Roman practice, we hold inaugurations. Fortunately, no one will be gutting a bull to tell Barack Obama whether or not he can expect to have a good presidency. But we will be praying all over creation. Sadly, Michael Newdow lost his bid in the federal court with regard to having so help me God in the oath, because it's not in the oath. The Constitution states what the oath shall be, and so help me God isn't in there. And it may be a little bit of a fine point to put on it, but what Michael Newdow was trying to do was to keep John Roberts, that weird little right-wing goober who's the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, trying to keep him from adding it to an oath that it doesn't have a place in. In arguing it, Michael Newdow said, hey, it's fine if Obama wants to add so help me God, but it is not in the oath. But that's okay. They'll just, add it in there. Because when you find language you want to add to the Constitution, you just throw it in there, especially if it's some good religious public language. Never mind that whole how to amend the Constitution section of the Constitution. We'll just sort of pretend that that doesn't exist. So a federal court said that, it's all right. U.S. District Court Judge Reggie Walton handed down the ruling defeating Michael Newdow today. Listen tomorrow. This is the oath. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And for some reason, presidents add, so help me God. So that so the so help me God part will be in there. But Reggie Walton has said it's okay. We can God up some constitutional language with the religious language that doesn't exist. I mean, after all, it's no harm, no foul. That's why we're praying all over the place. HBO, of course, carried all the festivities, including the invocation by Bishop Gene Robinson, America's first openly gay bishop, but refused to carry it, carry that part. No invocation. Not going to be there. HBO, for some reason, I don't know who they, I guess they were afraid of the American Family Association, that they might boycott the HBO. So here's, for those of you, there is video of it out there, and for those of you who might like to hear what Bishop Robinson had to say yesterday, this is it.
O God of our many understandings, we pray that you will bless us with tears. Tears for a world in which over a billion people exist on less than a dollar a day, where young women in many lands are beaten and raped for wanting an education, and thousands die daily from malnutrition, malaria, and AIDS. Bless this nation with anger. Anger at discrimination at home and abroad, against refugees and immigrants, women, people of color, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. Bless us with discomfort at the easy, simplistic answers we've preferred to hear from our politicians instead of the truth about ourselves and our world, which we need to face if we are going to rise to the challenges of the future. Bless us with patience and the knowledge that none of what ails us will be fixed anytime soon, and the understanding that our new president is a human being, not a messiah. Bless us with humility, open to understanding that our own needs as a nation must always be balanced with those of the world. Bless us with freedom from mere tolerance, replacing it with a genuine respect and warm embrace of our differences. And bless us with compassion and generosity, remembering that every religion's God judges us by the way we care for the most vulnerable. And God, we give you thanks for your child, Barack, as he assumes the office of President of the United States. Give him wisdom beyond his years. Inspire him with President Lincoln's reconciling leadership style, President Kennedy's ability to enlist our best efforts, and Dr. King's dream of a nation for all people. Give him a quiet heart, for our ship of state needs a steady, calm captain. Give him stirring words. We will need to be inspired and motivated to make the personal and common sacrifices necessary to facing the challenges ahead. Make him colorblind, reminding him of his own words that under his leadership, there will be neither red nor blue states, but the United States. Help him remember his own oppression as a minority, drawing on that experience of discrimination, that he might seek to change the lives of those who are still its victims. Give him strength to find family time, and privacy, and help him remember that even though he is president, a father only gets one shot at his daughter's childhoods. And please, God, keep him safe. We know we ask too much of our presidents, and we are asking far too much of this one. We implore you, O good and great God, to keep him safe. Hold him in the palm of your hand, that he might do the work we have called him to do, that he might find joy in this impossible calling, and that in the end, he might lead us as a nation to a place of integrity, prosperity, and peace. Amen.
Wow, that sure is subversive, isn't it? Can't be having that on the national TV box, not with all that business about how bless, afflict us, O God, with knowledge that people are suffering in this world. Oh, heck no, that's got no place in the national discourse. And, of course, at the same time that he was praying, some freakish, hate-filled morons, calling themselves Brother Reuben and the official street preachers, were chanting things like, Jesus doesn't love homosexuals. Whew. Just trying to inject a little bit of reality into the party here. Bishop Robinson didn't get to his invocation was not seen as it was carried by HBO. A lot of people didn't see what HBO carried because HBO are encouraged cable systems to put it on a separate channel and let people have the feed for free. But a lot of outfits, I know Comcast was one of them, said no. HBO's a pay service. We're not getting any money for this. We're dang sure not going to run it. So there was no Bishop Eugene Robinson on the HBO coverage. And when the D.C. Gay Men's Choir sang, they went unidentified by HBO. Not even so much as, not even a miserable little font. You know, D.C. Gay Men's Choir. Nope, sorry. Invisible. So that's how it begins. And in light of the fact that Brother Reuben and the official street preachers were out there screaming what they were screaming, nah, actually, we're a lot better tempered and we're a lot more decent human beings than right-wingers, so I'm guessing nobody will be shouting down that right-wing freak Rick Warren who compared himself to Hitler and Lenin and Mao. Not that I compared him, but who compared himself. Nah, it's not going to happen. No. But I tell you what, it is exciting. And just I enjoyed being in the chair these 3 hours before the program began to listen to Guy James, who is already in D.C. I am looking forward to finally getting to meet Guy James tomorrow. I'll be getting into D.C. probably somewhere around 4:30 p.m. And I'll probably find Guy by about 5. I haven't been in a crowd like this in quite some time, and I have a feeling it is going to be electric. I'm really looking forward to it. So, again, just a reminder, no show tomorrow night, to the best of my knowledge. You know, if there is one, I'll run it. I'll do it, but I just don't sense that there will be one. Then the big Progressive Media Summit on Wednesday. Neither Guy nor I will be on the air. And then home on Thursday and behind the mic again Thursday evening at the usual Bat Channel and Bat Time. Okay? And was it, could you hear as you listened to Guy earlier this afternoon, could you hear the excitement in his voice? Could you hear the buzz in the Radio Row room where he was? It was something. And he was telling me off air that the place is just electrified.
And I have a feeling this is putting a strain on D.C.'s infrastructure such as it has never seen before. Lord knows, even the wingnuts didn't show up for the inauguration of George Bush this way. Nor did they really for the Ronnie Reagan. No, no. This is a seminal moment. You know, I heard Guy mention that they're asking in the papers for people to take it easy on the bandwidth and not use their cell phones unless they absolutely have to. It's a little stressful. So I'm hoping everything goes well as I go from Dulles to D.C. It's a bus ride from Dulles to the furthest metro stop, then on the metro, and a change trains at from the Orange Line to the Red Line or what have you, and wind up at Union Station. I'm taking video and a still camera along with me to try to record some of the events. Or just, hey, what do you think of this, you know, kind of thing, if it's at all humanly possible. And if there's anything worth sharing, you may rest assured that I will, in fact, share it with you. But to get back to what I was talking about earlier, the Robert Frost poem there, The Gift Outright. I haven't seen in any of my reading that this other poem is going to be read, although why this other poem isn't going to be read, I don't know, because nothing captures what I think a lot of people are hoping for the incoming administration as much as this poem does. It is a poem by Langston Hughes, 1902 to 1967. It is as brilliant a piece of poetry, and I've read it on this program before, it's as brilliant a piece of poetry as has ever been written in the English language, and certainly in the American experience. Langston Hughes was an African-American poet, and he had a beautiful poet's voice. And someone should be reading this poem tomorrow. Never mind Rick Warren and his stupid invocation. Someone should be reading this poem tomorrow. And I don't know if it's being read anywhere else today, because this has to do not just with the inauguration tomorrow, but with a way of marking the Dr. King holiday today. And it is stirring, so I'll just share it with you for a moment. The title of the poem is Let America Be America Again. And if you're sitting there thinking, oh, I remember when Bob read this a while back, don't read it again, Bob. Bob's going to read it again. Because this is one that, if I had the time, I would see to it that my children memorized this poem. You know, we live in a country where people used to memorize poetry. And I found out along the way, or at least I think, that while it's not exactly in vogue in education right now to run around having children memorize things, memorization, rote memorization, you know, it's like it's something bad. It turns out that that's just another way that we hardwire the brain. And this is good. It's a good thing to do, but we don't do it anymore. I would love to be able to turn to one of my children and say, tell me that poem again, son. Tell me, Doodle. Tell me, Margie. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great, strong land of love, where never kings connive, nor tyrants scheme, that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, But opportunity is real, and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free.
Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that draws your veil across the stars?
I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars.
I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog-eat-dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient, endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the man, or of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro servant to you all. I am the people humble, hungry, mean, hungry yet today despite the dream, beaten yet today, oh, pioneers!
I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream in the old world, while still a serf of kings,
who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home.
For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore, and Poland's plain, and England's grassy lee, and torn from black Africa's strand, I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me. Surely not me.
The millions on relief today? The millions shot down when we strike? The millions who have nothing for our pay? For all the dreams we've dreamed on, and all the songs we've sung, and all the hopes we've held, and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay, except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet, and yet must be. The land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain must bring back our mighty dream again.
Sure. Call me any ugly name you choose. The steel of freedom does not stain from those who live like leeches on the people's lives. We must take back our land again, America. Oh, yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath. America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains and the endless plain, all that stretch of these great green states, and make America again.
Don't reckon anybody's going to read that tomorrow. But I don't reckon I know why.
There is no more apropos piece of poetry in America than that for the day that is tomorrow. Because, frankly, this day, this inauguration, more than any other inauguration, was brought to you by the will of the people of the United States. Young people and old, black and white, Asian, Native, all types, Jew, Muslim, Christian, Hindu. It was brought to us as a determination as a part of a determination that America is worth saving and that America is worth working for and that America can, in fact, in Langston Hughes's words, be America again. History will happen before our very eyes tomorrow. It will unfold, and we will get a little glimpse of the future. A little glimpse, as the mythologies go, over Jordan. Oh, there is still a lot of dirty business to be cleaned up. I'm sure that the Bush administration has booby-trapped this government to the best of its monstrous abilities. But we go forward tomorrow in the hope that America can be America again. Don't we? Don't we? So just some thoughts on, just some thoughts on the day as it has unfolded and as it may be tomorrow. Since I won't be on the air the next couple of nights, it's very important that you get your thoughts in tonight. And I welcome you to do so. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. Or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. What are you expecting of tomorrow? Will you join us in the chat room tomorrow? We will all be there a little bit before noon Eastern time. And, well, I won't be, but there will be a room full of folks. In the chat room. And I believe we will also have a feed of the audio that John Fox will be pulling together, if at all possible. Guy James will be live, as usual, at 3 p.m. tomorrow, and he will go till 6. Agnes will be ably producing him in the studio here as I am in the air and trying to work my way through to downtown D.C. So, you know, I welcome your thoughts this evening. There's other news. I think we should, it would be improper because there has been altogether not enough talk of Dr. King today, because we are all a quiver, waiting for the nightmare rain of blood and gore and death and hell and damnation that has been George W. Bush to finally come to its end. So we'll take a little break and come back. Your phone calls or my babblings. Whatever it turns out that you want most. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob. I hate it when things like this work out this way. Let's try this again. Here we go.
Us people are just poems. were 90% metaphor, with a leanness of meaning approaching hyperdistillation. And once upon a time, we were moonshine, rushing down the throat of a giraffe. Yes, rushing down the long hall, despite what the PA announcement says. Yes, rushing down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that it will always be there. It's part of a pair. There on the bow of Noah's Ark. The most prestigious couple just kicking back, parked against a perfectly blue sky on a morning beatific in its Indian summer breeze. On the day that America fell to its knees after strutting around for a century without saying thank you or please. And the shock was so sonic and the smoke was deafening between the setup and the punchline, because we were all on time for work that day. We all boarded that plane for to fly. And then while the fires were raging, we all climbed up on the windowsill, and then we all held hands and jumped into the sky. And every burrow looked up when it heard the first blast, and then every dumb action movie was summarily surpassed, and the exodus uptown by foot and motor car looked more like war than anything I've seen so far. So far. So far. So fierce and ingenious, a poetic specter so far gone that every jackass newscaster was struck dumb and stumbling over, oh my God, and this is unbelievable, and on and on. And I'll tell you what, while we're at it, you can keep the Pentagon, you can keep the propaganda, you can keep each and every TV that's been trying to convince me to participate in some prep school punk's plan to perpetuate retribution. Perpetuate retribution. Even as the blue toxic smoke of our lesson in retribution is still hanging in the air, and there's ash on our shoes. And there's ash in our hair. And there's a fine silt on every mantle from Hell's Kitchen to Brooklyn. And the streets are full of stories, sudden twists and near misses. And soon every open bar is crammed to the rafters with tales of narrowly averted disasters. And the whiskey is flowing like never before. As all over the country, coaches shake their heads and pour. Here's a toast to all the folks that live in Palestine, Afghanistan, Iraq, El Salvador. Here's a toast to all the folks living on the Pine Ridge Reservation, under the stone cold gaze of Mount Rushmore. Here's a toast to all those nurses and doctors who daily provide women with a choice, who stand down atop the size of Oklahoma City just to listen to a young woman's voice. Here's a toast to all those folks on death row right now, awaiting the executioner's guillotine, who are shackled there with dread and can only escape into their heads to find peace in the form of a dream. Peace in the form of a dream. Peace in the form of a dream. Because take away our PlayStations, and we are a third world nation. Under the thumb of some blue blood royal son who stole the Oval Office and that phony election. I mean, they don't take a weatherman to look around and see the weather. Just said he delivered Florida, folks, and boy, did he ever. And we hold these truths to be self-evident. Number one, George W. Bush is not president. Number two, America is not a true democracy. And number three, the media is not fooling me, because I am a poem heeding hyperdistillation, and I've got no room for a lie so verbose. Yes, I'm looking out over my whole human family, and I'm raising my glass in a toast. Here's to our last drink of fossil fuels. May we bow to yet all of this song. Shoot away the swarms of commuter planes. Find that train ticket we lost. Because once upon a time, the line followed the river and peeked into all the backyards. And the laundry was waving and the graffiti was teasing us from brick walls and bridges. We were bowling over ridges, through valleys, under stars. I dream of touring like Duke Ellington in my own railroad car. I dream of waiting on the tall, blonde wooden benches in a grand station aglow with grace, and then standing out on the platform and feeling the air on my face. Give back the night, its distant whistle. Give the darkness back its song. Give the big royal companies the finger finally and relearn how to rock and roll. Yes, the lessons are all around us and the truth is waiting there. It's time to pick through the rubble, clean the streets and clear the air. Get our governmental bullets picked out of the sand of someone else's desert. Put it back in his hands with the hypocritical chant of freedom forever. Because when one lone phone rang in 2000, one at 10 after 9 on 911, which was the number we all called when that old phone rang right off the wall, right off our desk and down the long hall, down the long stairs in the building so tall that the whole world turned just to watch it fall.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
First time around, the bomb, the rider truck, the parking garage, the princess that didn't even feel the pee. Remember joking around in our apartment on Avenue D? Can you imagine how many paper coffee cups would have to change their design following a fantastical reversal of the New York skyline? It was a joke at the time. And that was just a few years ago, so let the record show that the FBI was all over that case, that the plot was obvious and in everybody's face, and spoke in that scene religiously, the CIA, or is it KGB, committing countless crimes against humanity with this kind of eventuality as its excuse for abuse after expensive abuse, and they didn't have a clue. Look, another window to see. Way up here, 104th floor, look. Another key, another door. 10% literal, 90% metaphor. 3,000 some poems disguised as people on an almost too perfect day. Must be more than pawns in some asshole's passion play. So now it's your job, and it's my job to make it that way, to make sure they didn't die in vain. Shh. Baby, listen. Hear the train.
Annie DeFranco. The name of that is Self-Evident. And it is brilliant. And it just seemed reminiscent of I don't know, will there be a cheer tomorrow? Or will there be a great sigh of relief? The tendency toward that sigh of relief, I think, will be understandable. But as I keep saying, the work begins tomorrow, and I hope it is work that is engaged in joyfully, but I also hope it is work that is engaged in meaningfully. There is barely a thing that George Bush did not set his disastrous hand to in the last 8 years that does not need to be righted and corrected and fixed and deloused. Keith Olbermann did 8 years in 8 minutes. I guess it was Friday. And that was brilliant, too. That was absolutely stunning. Just to contemplate all the horror that has been perpetrated over these last 8 years. And glory, hallelujah, the horror ends tomorrow. But not before George Bush can stick his thumb in our eye just one more time. Just one more time. Just one more dirty little bit of business on the way out of town. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about two murderers. Two more murderers, or killers, shooters. They wanted to be murderers, they just didn't succeed. It was the shooting of Osvaldo Aldrete Davila in a place near Fabens, Texas. It is the story of Ignacio Ramos and Jose Compeán. A pair of liars, a pair of felons, attempted murderers, and yes, Border Patrol agents. Now, if you follow right-wing hate at all, you can hardly have missed the mention of Ramos and Compeán, these two thugs. What they did in 2005 was to fire 15 bullets at a suspected drug dealer who was running away from them. They fired 15 bullets at the back of Osvaldo Aldrete Davila. They hit him once in the buttocks. 15 bullets, they hit him once. In the back, in the butt. But he made it across the Rio Grande. Ramos and Compeán were tried and sentenced to 10 years each in the federal penitentiary. And the right wing began having a hissy, calling them heroes, calling them brave protectors of the nation. Gee, I didn't know brave protectors in the nation shot on unarmed people in the back. Did you? 400,000 people signed a petition demanding a pardon for these two thugs. At least two bills were put forward in Congress, one with over 100 co-sponsors that included 5 Democrats. These were bills to pardon these two homicidal maniacs. Lou Dobbs has turned positively purple in the face, rhapsodizing over the patriotism of Ramos and Compeán. They have been lied about in their aggrandizement. They have been made to appear good when they are evil. They were completely reinvented by right-wing media. Here's the story. On February 17, 2005, Osvaldo Aldrete Davila led Border Patrol agents on a high-speed car chase that ended at a ditch about 120 yards from Mexico. Aldrete Davila abandoned a van with 743 pounds of marijuana inside and made a dash for the border. Compeán on foot intercepted him, and Aldrete Davila put his hands in the air to surrender. At the trial of these two criminal garbage, it came out that after Aldrete Davila put his hands in the air to surrender, Compeon tried to hit Aldrete Davila with the butt of his shotgun and missed and fell into the 11-foot deep ditch. At which point Aldrete Davila took off running again. So Compeon climbs out of the ditch, madder by then than he was to begin with, and shot at him 14 times and missed. Ramos then fired once. The bullet entered Aldrete Davila's left buttock, severed his urethra, and came to rest in his right thigh. He fell down, got back up, and escaped across the Rio Grande into Mexico. Then Ramos and Compeon covered it all up. Compeon hid some of the 14 shell casings, and then he brought a third agent into the problem, coming back to the scene later in the day to dispose of the rest of the shell casings. Neither Ramos nor Compeon ever reported the shooting. They were only arrested a month later because the victim's mother is a friend with the mother-in-law of a Border Patrol agent in Arizona. Renee Sanchez is the Border Patrol agent, and he, after hearing about the incident from his mother-in-law, sent a report to the Department of Homeland Security in Washington. And an agent was dispatched to Texas to investigate. Border Patrol agents, plural, got on the stand and swore to tell the truth and testified against Ramos and Compeon. And, among other things, put the lie to Compeon's, practically his entire account of how it all went down. The jury found Ramos and Compeon guilty of everything with the exception of assault with intent to commit murder. And today, George W. Bush put a finger in the eye of America and told us to eat it and smile. Because like Scooter Libby before them, George Bush, God, George Bush commuted the sentences of Ramos and Compeon. No kidding, he really did. You know, we've been watching for the pardon list to see what sort of dirty business George Bush would engage in. And this is par for the course. There is nothing heroic about Ramos and Compeon. Nothing heroic at all. Nothing patriotic about Ramos and Compeon. Nothing righteous about Ramos and Compeon. And yet today, Ramos and Compeon got a walk. They're probably already on the way out. Thanks, George. Now, why would he do something as dirty and rotten, as sleazy as all that? Well, dim leader. Well, dim leader felt like, as was the case with Scooter Libby, dim leader felt like that, well, you know, the punishment was too harsh.
Now, death for Carla Faye Tucker some many years back, when he was still the governor of the state of Texas, Carla Faye Tucker, who had turned her life around, Carla Faye Tucker, who had become, frankly, if you want to use this kind of terminology, a blessing to death row and to the prison in which she was incarcerated for murder. Carla Faye Tucker's punishment was not too harsh. George Bush, if you recall, actually giggled about signing the order for her death.
Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. Killer.
Bush's decision to commute the sentences was welcomed by both Republican and Democratic members of Congress. They had long argued that the agents were merely doing their jobs defending the American border against criminals. They also maintained that the more than 10-year prison sentences the pair was given were too harsh. Really. Now, granted, this is literally the gang who can't shoot straight. Remember, 14 rounds Compeon fired, 13 rounds Compeon fired, and Ramos fired one and shot him in the butt. Shoot him in the back, Gomez! Shoot him in the back! I always loved it when Grandmama would say that on the Adams Family, but it's not very funny here, is it? Jerome Corsi was involved with this. He, of course, is the abomination and swift boat sleaze maggot. Lou Dobbs, as I said, was in on it. Glenn Beck said it was evidence of the return of the New World Order. The White House has said, however, that these are the last pardons or commutations that Bush is planning. So maybe there won't be, maybe that's the last finger in the eye. God, I hope so. Because that's bad enough. Turning a pair of inept wannabe murderers who shoot people in the back loose on the public again. A little bit stunning, isn't it? And it sucks. It stinks. But it's the last he'll be able to do. All those scenarios that we just discussed, whereby, oh, perhaps George would resign, would pardon Cheney, and then Cheney, and then would resign, and Cheney would pardon him, didn't come through. Politico had a list of 10 pardons to watch for that also apparently will not come through. They were. No pardon for Scooter Libby. No pardon for Alberto Gonzalez. No pardons for AIPAC former members and lobbyists Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman, or Pentagon analyst Lawrence Franklin. Nope. You know, I think the White House and the Bush administration calculated. To one degree or another, just exactly how many indignities the American people would tolerate. No pardon for former Justice Department official Bradley Schlossman or Michael Milken. Number 7 on the list were Ignacio Ramos and Jose Compeon. They got the Christmas present. And no pardon for Randy Duke Cunningham. Thank heaven for small favors. So unless something breaks in the next few hours, that's the end of the pardons. Now, does that mean that they feel comfortable in thinking that no one will pursue them? I don't know. Now, I'm sure the more...
paranoid inclined among us might be tempted to say that there's the fix is in or the deal has been done. But all we know is that here in a very short span of time, some 16 hours, 59 minutes, and 25 seconds, the George W. Bush reign of terror is over. And I'm pretty grateful for that. So light up the phones. Don't do that. Wait till 8:30 p.m. Eastern time and then light all six lines up, because that makes it impossible to get through them. If you've got something to say, say it. And we'll come back with the next hour here in a couple of minutes. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Fathers, they had pride. It wasn't perfect, they fought and died. 200 years of struggle for equality. Now we look more like a monarchy. The halls where justice did once reside has been sold out and replaced with lies. It's all money, power to the few. How long until they come for you? And you say that it can never happen here. And you say it can never happen here. Burn habeas corpus, tear up the writs, rubber stamp Senate of hypocrites. Those new detention camps weren't built for show. Posse comitatus is next to go. And you say that it can never happen here. And you say that it can never happen here. Fear rules a mob. You print, you lose your job. The clean one makes it safe for you. It's death for many, riches for the few. And you say that it can never happen here. And you say
you're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. On Thursday, Hillary Clinton became the newest Secretary of State. In recent weeks, both Clinton and President-elect Barack Obama have expressed that they would lift the travel ban to Cuba. Jana Lipman's book, Guantanamo, A Working Class History Between Empire and Revolution, explores the history of the controversial U.S. naval base on the eastern tip of Cuba, Guantanamo Bay. Lipman told the Workers Independent News during an interview on Thursday that she would support lifting the travel ban.
There's no reason at this day and age why Americans should not be able to travel to Cuba, and really for the most part why Cubans who want to travel to the United States should not be able to travel to the United States.
However, Lipman says Obama needs to go farther and straight out close down the base.
That, in fact, would change the economy of eastern Cuba and of Guantanamo. It would allow Cubans to have access to the bay, and I think symbolically on an international stage would send a huge signal to the world that the United States is not interested in continuing practices of military detention.
As Barack Obama becomes America's first black president, workers and their unions see hope for real change. Doug Cunningham reports.
Teamsters President James Hoffa.
Barack Obama is a bright inspiration to all of us, and I believe that we're going to have a great 8 years. He's going to help workers. He's going to help the middle class. It's the workers of America that have built America from the bottom up, and it's time that somebody believes in us and somebody who will fight for us, and Barack Obama is that person.
Hoffa expects to see the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform passed during Obama's first year.
It's something that will give all Americans a chance to organize. Everybody needs a union. It's a time to rebuild the middle class, and that's what will do it.
Under George Bush's Labor Department, workers suffered, Hoffa says, but he believes that Obama Labor Secretary Hilda Solis will be much more worker-friendly.
I believe you're going to see a renaissance with regard to workers' rights, with regard to job safety, with regard to trade policies that keep good jobs in this country. I'm excited about these times.
Circuit City announced plans on Friday to shut down its remaining 567 stores. As a result, 34,000 workers are likely to lose their jobs. The company has already begun liquidating merchandise and slashing prices to move stock out of stores in preparation of full closure on or around March 31st. The company shut down its website and call center on Sunday. All employees will receive 60 days notice that they are being laid off in accordance with federal law. And workers who are laid off before that time will still receive pay and benefits corresponding to that amount of time. 765 Circuit City stores in Canada will not be closing.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, 8 minutes past the hour. That was John Koontz. It can never happen here. God, how can we forget? 8 years of terror and horror, and maybe I'm just hanging on to it a little bit too hard, but I for one won't forget what that evil little man has done to my country. Let's go to the phones. Hey, Luke, what's up?
Hello, Bob. As we said, our last night to live under the reign of errors. Or the end of an error, however you want to think of it.
Yeah, both of the above.
But, you know, as I say, I was listening, like I say, last week, I think it's over at MSNBC, I'm sure it's probably YouTube, the 8 years and 8 minutes from Oberman.
Right.
The thing was, he didn't hit all of them. He just hit the highlights. And that even that was the highlight to highlights. Because you can go to different places, like Jim Hightower had one recently where he went down a whole list of them, and it was like, you know, like I say, it's just one of them ones where you just want to just like remind everybody, said, folks, this just didn't happen in the last 2 years. This is the whole 8 years. You know, people say, oh, it's after 9/11. No, you can go that first 9 months and you see with them some what was going to happen right then and there. You know, it's like that compassion conservative stuff. Well, that's just for the election. We got to get on past that. You know, I was appointed by friends in the Supreme Court, so that's my high-level mandate. Like, mandate? You were just standing in the wrong place at the right time.
And I don't... I just keep looking at that countdown clock, Luke. And I'm like a kid waiting for Christmas. I really am.
Well, it's one of those things, like I said, just think of the joy of it. Tomorrow night when we go to bed, it'll be under a land not ruled by dim sun.
Yeah. And, you know, not just an idiot, but an evil, malintentioned idiot. That's the thing. You know, the Warren G. Harding was an idiot.
Well, you know, it's like we've said before, we've talked about it. I still, to this day, nobody will ever convince me that the only reason he even ran for president because he wanted to prove he could do something daddy couldn't. That's the whole of his desire to be president, just so he could prove he could do something daddy couldn't.
Well, that's been his whole life, is this weird, twisted, purely textbook Oedipal thing going on with his father.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, couldn't you just gone out in the front yard like you did that one time before and just beat the hell out of each other and get it over? Oh.
Or maybe a really vigorous game of croquet or badminton. You know, they play that up in Kennebunkport.
Oh, yes. I was wondering about, he's a Texan. Yeah, he's a Texan who was born in Connecticut. You know?
Exactly.
It's one of those things. It's like I still always go back to one of the first ones I always remember was them always going, well, no one could imagine anybody flying planes into buildings. And then somebody came up and showed the thing when they had the G7 conference in Milan. And they kept dim sum out on the battleship because there was a chance there had been rumors that people were going to take planes and fly them into the buildings. But oops, sorry, our press, our mainstream media, mainstream meatheads, they couldn't think enough to play that, you know, with show 6 months ago where she was saying that and then turn around where she's saying 6 months later, no one could think of it. Oh, I tell you what, you know, it's one of those things, it's like, say, I saw somebody write it today, and I can't remember who it was, and I apologize for that, that said that one of the first tests for Obama is, are you gonna honor the oath you're gonna take tomorrow and go after them? Because, like I say, you should assign a U.S. attorney, should be assigned to go after them and look through their history. And, you know what I mean? I mean, that'd be a good place for Patrick Fitzgerald. You know, let's put him on it. You know, let's start looking through the paperwork. And I don't know what else you want to do. That's one of the ones that's like, just get to it. You know, here's your mandate. Find out what they did and when they did it. You know, we have things, you know, if I say,
even if it's not prosecutions, Luke, I think it was the Paul Krugman piece that was published in Rolling Stone, letter to an incoming president or letter to a new president, whatever, where he said, even if we can't have prosecutions, we need something on the order of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Yeah.
Put Patrick Fitzgerald in charge of that.
What happened? Yeah, it's like say, because there's so much stuff, you know, that we already know now, we're never going to know. Because, you know, as they said, as they were talking about today, that the only thing him and Laura's got is just their suitcases. And I said, well, they probably worn out a couple of good shredding machines on the way up to that. And like I said, when they go into Blair House and they go down in the bunker, I want the hazmat and the police teams going down there checking for booby traps. Because like I say, with Cheney, I have no doubt of it. You know, if all of a sudden everybody started getting sick in the White House, I'd look at Dick Cheney and go, what'd you leave? Where'd you leave it?
Yeah, no kidding. And that's, you know, that's why very real booby trap. I have no doubt that there's been a very real booby trapping of the government.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's things set up that we are, you know, it's like you're talking about the pardons. I'm sure there's a handful of pardons out there that we're not going to find out until whoever it is flashes them and says, oh, yeah, I've got a pardon. Oh, he didn't put that into the Justice Department. Well, he passed a signing statement that he didn't have to because he's George Bush. Don't have to follow the law on that. No, no, no. That wouldn't be any fun.
Yeah, one of the what would we call that? A vest pocket pardon?
Yeah. Well, you just call it a vest pocket veto. It'd be the same thing. It's a sort of him. Yeah, you know, it's one we just hid away. We didn't tell anybody about it. You know, it's like I say, like we were talking about. You know, and you were talking about a minute ago. It's like the thing with Cheney. I wouldn't put it past them at 11:45 tomorrow morning. Them do that. You know, he resigns. Uncle Dick is present for 15 minutes and signs the paperwork.
Do you suppose he'll? I've been asking this. Do you suppose he'll sneak out the back door of the White House the way he snuck in it?
Oh, it's one of those things.
Do you remember? You remember that? And I noticed this watching the clip of Fahrenheit 9/11. Do you remember the fact that you know how it's traditional for presidents to walk the last 100 or so yards to the podium? You remember how George couldn't do that? That instead the Secret Service had to step on it,
yeah.
And he couldn't get out of the car because he was so despised and so loathed.
Well, I mean, I'm amazed with all this coverage. I haven't heard anybody so far on the mainstream media mention the fact that, oh, by the way, we don't think that this president's going to have to hide from coverage because of the people booing him as he passes. As Dim Sun had the problem in 2000, you know, when there were whole sections of the parade they couldn't show.
Yeah, because of the flying eggs and so forth.
Uh-huh. And the protesters. Like I said, I would not be surprised, though. I'm sure that the probably our friend at Mr. Norquist will probably try to get some people out there. And of course, it'll be sort of like the Miami thing during the recount. I'm sure they'll all be, if you take the picture, they'll all be members of Republican staff. But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the line you'll see a bunch of them stand up with placards protesting him. Probably wearing a handkerchief across their face so you can't recognize who they are.
Oh, well, you know, you want to talk about sick. There's this character by the name, and I'm sure you paying attention as you do. You're familiar with the name Hal Turner, right? He's Sean Hannity's buddy. He's just a nasty neo-Nazi freak.
He's the one that he does the things that Sean doesn't want to be attached to legally.
Yeah, well, he has suggested it would be a good thing to use an unmanned drone carrying explosives to attack the inaugural crowd, and said mass murder of those attending the event, quote, would be a public service, unquote.
Oh, God.
And then dig this. Here's another quote from him. After Tuesday, the name Hal Turner may live in infamy. Let it be known that I saw what was necessary and decided to do what had to be done. I make no apology to those affected or their families.
This is somebody who needs to be taken to a nice little place somewhere in Baltimore and put into a room with a small little window in it that they can look in and out of for the next week, just for the fun of it. You're going to be a guest. Congratulations.
8 days ago, he posted something at his filthy little blog, this Hal Turner did, under the title My Inauguration Dream, Luke. It featured a small unmanned drone, an electronic guidance system, and sticks of dynamite. He then also discussed the possibility of sending up balloons filled with helium and a payload and fitted with fuses that would explode the balloons over the crowds. And then he showed some crappy videos saying that it had been tested, and he said, it got tested and it worked. Watch the video and imagine what payload, other than the index cards taped to the outside of the test balloons, might be substituted. Might be something messy, something contagious, something deadly. Such possibilities.
Oh, God.
And then he followed up this past Thursday and said, all the assets that need to be in place for next week are now in place, deep within the security perimeter. Everything is a go. We have crossed the Rubicon. Let history judge us well.
Like I said, he should be a guest of some federal group for the next, week or so, just on general principle. It's like, you know what, we don't care if you did something or not. We're just going to hang on to you for the next week, just in case, just so we know where you are. We won't have to come looking for you.
It just astonishes me that they are really that evil.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Oh, no. They ran one up a while ago, a day or two ago that I'd forgotten about. You know, what I mean, it was just such an instant. One page out of a whole book of it. Was the, remember the one where the, he suggested to Blair about them painting the plane the UN colors and flying it over Iraq so that they could get them to shoot at it and give them the excuse to go in and fight? Now, this is before we.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's like this thing, you know, right now with the Iraq, Israelis. Isn't it amazing how a group that always seems to claim that they have amazing, you know, we have all these high-tech weaponry, we can't miss and all this stuff. Amazing enough, they seem to miss when they are getting ready to shoot somebody from the UN. Oh, we blew up that building that the UN was using? Well, that was just an error.
Yeah, well, oopsie. Yeah, these things
anybody
happen.
Else, we hit exactly who we want. You know, these are the same people, like I remember, I'll go back to the one 2 years ago when it was the thing in Lebanon, and, oh, by the way, there's one guy we want to kill, so let's take out an apartment building.
Yeah, swatting flies with sledgehammers. Right.
Those 35 other dead people, well, they were just in the wrong place. They shouldn't have been there.
That was a terrorist 3-year-old. Can't you tell?
But you know what I mean? Yeah, it's one of those things. It's amazing how when everybody else does it, it's terrorism. When they do it, it's something different. Or when, you know, or when the Bush family does it, it's not the same thing. No. It's like you had a minute ago. I say one thing. Only good thing about this whole damn thing about him pardoning those two guys is finally Lou Dobbs will shut up about it. He has done, I swear to you, a show every week on that.
Oh, I know.
And it's like, say, amazingly enough, he never mentions the fact when he's talking about him that, oh, by the way, they shot the guy in the back. Then tried to hide the evidence. No. You never hear that when Lou talks about it.
No, but that, you know, I hate the fact that this is going to empower them, Luke.
I know, yeah, but I mean, every time you ever hear him talk about it, he never mentions a thing about that. Never mentions about the fact of them trying to hide the shell casings or anything. No.
No.
You know, it's like if you listen to him talk about it, you'd swear it was a gunfight that these guys barely escaped with.
No, I know. Going out in a blaze of glory, shooting it out with the Vetter alleys.
Oh,
it's just astonishing. Well, are you going to be able to watch tomorrow, or are you going to be too busy at work?
I'll be at work, but I'll turn the radio on and hopefully hook up to our NPR station. So hopefully they'll be carrying something good on it. I think they're going to carry most of it live, hopefully. So, but like, you know, like I say, I wish I could be somewhere where I could watch the countdown clock.
Well, if you can open the chat room, we're all going to be in there, Luke. And
unfortunately, I'll probably be out and about.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
It's called work. You know, I'm sorry, I'm against it, but
yeah, but like, they insist
like
you do it.
There's two bad habits I developed long ago: eating and living indoors. Until I figured, you know, it's like, say, if we were still nomadic and in the cave, it wouldn't be so bad. But unfortunately, the internet has a hard time reaching you down there. Oh, well, Bob, I'll talk at you down the road. I'll let some other people get on here and celebrate the fact of the, as we said, the end of the error.
Hear, hear.
And where I got that statement from was from Miss Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a good one.
That was a very good one. Luke, take care, and we'll talk soon.
All right, bud.
All right, bye now.
Have a good trip.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye. The end of an error. Hear, hear. I want to bring something. This is just cool from the concert where Bruce Springsteen showed up. And lo and behold, who was singing with Bruce Springsteen but Pete Seeger? And they resurrected Woody Guthrie's old classic. This is worth listening to because, among other things, they sang all the lyrics. All the lyrics, including the lyrics that have been sanitized out. To make a bold anthem toward working people into this prettied up, cleaned up little, you know, ditty that can be memorized by school children. Pete Seeger and Bruce Springsteen, check it out.
We'd like you to join us and perhaps for the greatest song ever written about our home. The father of American folk music, Pete Seeger, his grandson, Tyler. Lead us, Pete.
You sing it with us. We'll give you the words. When I was walking that ribbon of highway,
as I went walking that ribbon of highway, This land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. This land was made for you and me.
City,
by
the shadow of the steeple,
by the shadow of the steeple,
by the relief office,
I saw my people
as they stood there hungry.
This land was made for you and me.
A great high wall.
Stop me.
Big, big sign there.
Private property.
On the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me.
Nobody living
ever stopped me.
I go walking
freedom highway.
Nobody living
make me turn back.
I just love that. I do indeed. And I love that verse. In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people. By the relief office, I seen my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me? And that's the question we have to answer. Barack Obama won't answer it. The Congress won't answer it. Only you. And we the people, can answer that. And I hope we answer it well. I hope we do well by it. There's a poll out now. And with this being the Martin Luther King holiday, it is probably well worth mentioning.
two-thirds of African Americans surveyed say today that this is a CNN poll. That say that King's vision has been fulfilled with Barack Obama's election. And when I read that, I was reminded of that quote from Tony Snow. Remember Tony? Tony Snow declared, "Racism is only a memory." Is it? I'm hard-pressed to think that that Dr. King, were he still alive, would think that the dream has been fulfilled by the election of Barack Obama. Because it hasn't. I don't think Barack Obama would say that the dream's been fulfilled by his election. I don't think his ego is that monumental. Or that gross. And of course there are those who still call themselves liberals. I ran across this today. There are those who still call themselves liberals or progressives who are absolute, you know, I bear in mind, I'm not one of these that, you know, folks who thinks it's all going to be sunshine and violets the day after tomorrow. Again, I say what I said earlier. The hard work begins now. But still, this is a bit much. Those who subscribe to the group opinion try to force those of us who disagree to agree. I swear I must have been born backwards. I'm always skeptical of the group opinion. What's more, I wear my skepticism as a badge of honor. So don't try to make me into one of you Obamatons. It just won't work. Whatever happened to lead, follow, or get out of the way? Well, you always said lead, follow, or get out of the way, and I always got out of the way. Let's take just a day. Let's just take a day and enjoy what this means tomorrow. Revel in what is gone and have some hope for what is on the way. And I don't know, it's January the 19th, it's Martin Luther King Day. Is the job done? Can we all just sit down in the Barca Lounger and allow the middle-aged spread to take over and, work's done, no racism here? The Los Angeles Times noted that tomorrow, as he travels... as he travels down Pennsylvania Avenue, that he will retrace the path of Klan marches. He will roll past the ghosts of hotels and movie theaters that used to turn away people with skin color like his. The LA Times says this historic stretch bookended by the Capitol on one end and the White House on the other has witnessed many of the milestones that made an Obama presidency possible. The Emancipation Proclamation and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 were signed here. He will take up residence, official residence, in a building whose foundation stones were laid by slaves, as were the stones of the Capitol itself. And you cannot help but be moved by that fact. This nation was built by slaves and near slaves, and for the longest time was built by them, but was held for the benefit of the Andrew Carnegies and the J.P. Morgans of the world. and not for the benefit of those who broke their backs. And the question is whether, in the coming months and years, we will begin to turn that tide. Among other things, this morning, Obama went off to a homeless shelter for teenagers in Washington and helped to paint the walls there, noting that the King holiday is a call to service. I don't know how, I will not dare to speak for, but I do not have the first conception of how anybody could say that the inauguration of Barack Obama says that King's dream has been completed. I'm just astonished by that. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I know you don't have Langston Hughes, but I wanted to say this because this sums it up. In Virginia, this was said last night, and for those people who don't follow hip-hop, I'll explain in a minute. My president is black, my Maybach too, I'll be goddamned if my diamonds ain't blue, my money's dark green, my Benz light's gray, and I'm headed for D.C. Anybody feel me? My president is black, in fact, he's half white, so even in a racist mind, he's half right. If you got a racist mind, it's all right. My president is black, but his house is all white. That's from the mind of Jay-Z, who I would say is, I don't know if we would say he's the streets Langston Hughes, but I would definitely say he's like the streets Elmore Leonard or something to that effect.
Yeah.
That right there was done in a song, you might want to dig it up, I'll have to send it to you. It's by Young Jeezy called My President is Black, and it was made for the occasion that he thought that the president was going to be black. This was before he was elected, but he still made the song anyways. And Jay-Z decided to appear at this this concert, and the crowd erupted like crazy when he said that. And this brings to the theme to my call that's not talked about in the media, and it should be. This president that we have right now is partially why he's elected is, in my mind, because of the hip-hop generation. It's something that a lot of people don't understand when it comes to as hip-hop as a unifying force and of how of the promoters and the people on the streets and just connecting with the people in general. But this culture, I believe the hip-hop generation, if it wasn't for them, Obama wouldn't be in the office, point blank.
I think that, there's a lot of disparate groups, David, who contributed to this election, and I hope that they are not just forgotten.
I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is if they weren't on board and they didn't get the people, the young people connected to it, it was hip-hop that was the driving force for it, if that makes sense.
It does indeed. It absolutely does.
Okay. I mean, because a lot of people don't understand, hip-hop's not a form of music. It's a culture. People thought that it was going to be dead like disco. You got breakdancing, graffiti, MCing, and DJing. It's all of that, and it's all of that. So what's important to remember is like it's like a living institution what you're seeing right now, and probably the next president, or you're going to see a lot of that influence come into play, especially when you have someone. The reason why I quoted Jay-Z was because he is the staple. He's the universal one holding the torch right now. He's like the streets Barack Obama for like, you know, about going on 9 or 10 years now.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt of his talent, and there's no doubt of his artistic merit, and he has proven to have staying power.
Yeah.
So the question becomes one of, and you know, it's the same question you can ask out of those survey results. Now that he's in there, is it over? Now, I know that from the political standpoint it's not, because I'm still getting email hustles to donate more money to the Barack Obama campaign. I'm not kidding. I saw one just a few days ago.
Well, you know, that brings an interesting question. I mean, did you see the total of how much this inauguration is going to be?
No, I didn't, but I've been wondering. Any guesses?
$170 million.
See,
I have a problem with that, Bob.
Well, I do, too.
Well, that's good, because you're going to love my I'm making, like, an introductory post. Probably I'll do it after inauguration on the board, and you guys can check it out, where I go into it. But a little preview is, when I heard that number, and then I thought of all the people suffering in this country, and the fact that it was so easy to get that money, Bob, it was so easy for them to get that money. Just $1 million off the top, let alone $170 million, let alone $1 million. I thought there's something wrong. And I wonder if the people in this administration, they want to continue to ignore a real America. The fact that it's so easy to get something for a celebration when it's so hard to get money for real work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And see, to be fair, I objected to the Bush inauguration in 2004 because it was so over the top and so ostentatious. And it was done in a time of war. And, you know, Guy James mentioned during his program toward the end that Woodrow Wilson canceled inaugural balls, saying that they were inappropriate.
You know, Bob, I mean, just so people...
But by the same token, David, let's remember the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
This is, given what the economy is right now, for a lot of people who run businesses, whether they're restaurants or bars or little stores or shops or whatever, this may make or break their continued ability to stay in business, because we're hurting, and there's a lot of dollars going to be spent in Washington, D.C., starting Saturday and, you know, probably through Wednesday or Thursday even.
I understand completely, Bob. That's why I'm conflicted, because I believe that everyone should have a celebration and a monumentous occasion. But, you know, when I hear people, I don't want to hear anyone say we don't have the money when you just spent $170 million on a celebration. If someone asks for $1 million and they desperately need it, for example, the people in Tennessee, or for example, the people in the tent cities that are going to be is spreading rapidly in California.
David, I saw photographs the other day of something that our buddy Cindy in Washington State has been keeping me abreast of, and that's the massive flooding that's going on there, and hardly a peep about it. I mean, this is the epic, you know, sort of mind-blowing flooding. From early snow melts that weren't supposed to melt till next summer.
I haven't heard anything about it. That's surprising. But I guess it's this stir, the hysteria of the inauguration and all. And again, that's why I'm conflicted, because especially for Black people, this is like their moment, their celebration. They've got their chosen one in office right now. If for all those people who aren't on board with Kennedy, if there were any little few stragglers, this is a whole unifying moment. So I'm totally for a celebration. But when I see a figure like, man, when I see a figure like $170 million, and I start thinking about, for example, your operation, the Head On Radio, and when someone comes up to you or gets you a letter and says, well, we don't have any money for that, you know, you just have to start looking at people sideways and just thinking, what the hell is going on? The fact that people can't see a long-term investment, but they can see a celebration, an orgy of excitement and energy, but yet they can't understand a long-term investment of progression. You just have to wonder about that.
You know, I'm like you. I'm conflicted, David.
I can understand the urge of people to get out there and, you know, have a good time and celebrate for a night. But I also harbor a little fantasy. And that fantasy is one where Barack Obama says, enough, we're going to have the swearing in, we'll have some parades, that'll be cool, but you know what? I got work to do, and I'm going to work today. I'm not going to waste a day of the 4 years that I've been in here. Vacation boy took 77 vacations over 8 years. Well, I didn't take this job to go on vacation. There is work to be done.
I'm hoping to hear that, and here's something that I hope makes a relevant point, and I think it'll bring back to home with issues that you're vastly concerned as well. They're letting the rescuers of the Hudson disaster go, right?
Yeah.
To the inauguration. Okay, then why didn't they let the people in Tennessee who lost, what was it, 12 of their homes?
Yeah, they didn't get the invite.
They didn't get the invite. So, you know, that brings me back to the point where we boomerang and we go, are these people less than human? Are they less than Americans? What is it?
Less than noticeable?
Less than noticeable, yeah. I mean, I'm not buying the fact that they didn't hear about this story. Is it because people, I mean, this administration, this staff is big on their website, change.gov. They've heard of this story. I know they're probably listening to this station. So it's like, why haven't they put it on the front desk and said, look, these people deserve something. Don't they deserve a mention?
Oh, I know. And let's see. I forget which. I think it's Hannity is the insane one on this one. Sean Hannity has blamed the Hudson disaster on liberals. No, I'm sorry. He blamed, not disaster, but the plane going down in the Hudson, it turns out was Charles Schumer's fault.
It was a miracle. Remember, it was a miracle. It wasn't because of the Union Train staff.
You're right.
It was a miracle.
Now, you know, on the other hand, I'm still proud of the pilot because he's turning down requests for interviews. All the little for-profit media outlets are hopping up and down like some sort of Jack Russell Terrier on speed. We want to interview you. We want to interview you. And you know what? He's still a union man, and he has said, I got union stuff to do, and I'm not supposed to be out there babbling about this stuff until all the data is in. So thanks, but no thanks. I admire the heck out of that.
Oh, I admire that, too. I kind of wish a citizen from Tennessee was on that plane who had a family involved with that because... I don't know. You might get some press that way. I don't know how there is a way we can bring this issue to light and without the Obama's administration's support, which I don't understand, is like after the first day, if they're not on this, I don't know what I'll think.
I share your sentiments. I mentioned a minute ago this business with Sean Hannity. These people aren't going to settle down. They're not going to get normal. They don't want to participate. I mean, Ken Blackwell, I think it is, the freak from Ohio, the guy who dummied up the 2004 results in Ohio or helped do it.
Yeah.
He announced recently that, Republicans have to fight everything that would make for progressive reform in this country, because if Obama succeeds, it'll hurt the party. That's the thing. These people put party before their own country. You know, it's like John McCain, who went around the country, David, saying, my friends, I have a plan to get us out of Iraq and succeed in Afghanistan. Well, he didn't get elected, and I guess he doesn't feel like sharing his plan with anybody.
What's sad is they're gearing up already to blame President Obama on everything that's right about to happen. They'll probably blame the floods on him pretty soon. Give it a day or so, and then they'll blame the floods on him, how he didn't react. And I mean, and maybe what they'll do, and maybe what the right wing will do, they'll see this Tennessee thing as as if Obama doesn't respond, and they'll throw that in his face. They'll do anything.
Well, and they're off and running. I mean, this is a quote from Hannity.
Yeah.
Back in 2004, the New York senators, talking about Schumer, saw to it that a $200,000 earmark went to Geese Peace. Now, this is an animal rights group that devotes itself to saving Canada geese through non-lethal methods. Now, this was Schumer's attempt to solve the problem of overpopulation of geese, some of which live on Rikers Island. That's directly in the flight path of LaGuardia Airport. Now, the perilous result of this plan was seen on Thursday when the same breed of geese, Canada geese, downed U.S. Airways Flight 1549. Now, maybe our lawmakers should focus on preventing such tragedies rather than empowering groups that seem to care more about the birds than the safety of Americans. Straightjacket. You know, just
I know when you're going to D.C., how are you going to approach this issue with the Tennessee and the mountaintop removal in the midst of a celebration? Have you thought about it? Like,
well, the party will be over by the time we go to our meeting on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm just going to go and shake babies and kiss hands and And every hand I shake, I will, you know, I will mention what's going on here, because somebody has to.
I'm actually calling Tom Hartman's show because I still haven't heard anyone say it for 2 or 3 weeks, and I haven't heard Hartman do a story. And I'm just going to basically demand him he do a 3-hour segment for the people in Tennessee. They deserve it. I mean, the fact that, like I said, the fact that people will have repetitive type guests. And they've said their piece already, and you can read their op-eds, like women from the Independent Women Forum that Hartman has on and stuff like that. You just add up the time over and over again. It's like, listen, it's like there are people suffering and there are people dying, and all they just want to do is be heard. Simple. And
simple, you would think, yes.
I don't know who's not passing the message on to a lot of these hosts, but when I listen to on the radio, which will go unsaid, which networks, I don't hear it. And I hear a bunch of nonsense that I can read on a op-ed post or on a message board or on a blog, and it's already been covered. But this issue, you haven't even scratched the surface.
No, and some of that's going to have to be done by Congress, but by the same token, what they do is another matter entirely. There was a story recently about my congressman, Nick Rahal,
mm-hmm.
who is introducing legislation to... well, it turns out that he had a chance back in, I guess, was it 2000, David? This is amazing. Rahal had a chance back in 2000 to order regulation or be part of of legislation that would have regulated sludge ponds at places like Kingston, Tennessee, and he used all of his power to make sure that it didn't happen. But now he's for it. You know, I get a little tired of this business of closing barn doors after the horses are already gone.
I hear you, Bob, but in closing, on a positive note, I just wanted to mention, I hope you have a great experience in D.C. and you learn a lot and it's positive, and you have a lot of network contacts, and I hope they respond openly to your issues with Tennessee and West Virginia and all of that. And I just want to say, there's one thing that I'd like to mention is, since you're doing the Martin Luther King thing, there is a guy on YouTube. His name is Sean Booth, and he's doing something pretty amazing where he has a name called Biography Series, and he's taking biographies of every artist or an icon, whether it's politics or art or what have you, an author or something. And what he's doing is he's putting a rap to it, but then he's also, like, directing it through their lives. And his new one that he has up is Chapter 4, MLK and Obama, and he weaves it together in 4 minutes. It's amazing. I'll have to send it right now, and maybe you can play it sometime during this show.
Oh, that would be cool. That would be cool, David.
Well, right. Stay head on, and people, You can always hit the forums.
Absolutely. And I've noticed there's been some buzz going on there.
I noticed that too. But one thing I wanted to say before I leave about that is the fact that I see the traffic and it's on the silly stories. When I see 60 views and 40 views, I gotta wonder, why aren't these people responding? So all I can do is just say, go to the forums, your voice matters, your contribution matters, head on radionetwork.com/forum, and get in there and say your piece, whatever it is you want to say, and you are contributing something by keeping this moving in a positive and progressive direction.
Hear, hear. Well said, David. Thank you very much.
No problem.
All right. You take care.
All right. Later.
Bye. Yeah, I am going to tell people about what's going on here. Because this this idea, well, there was another news story out, or a blog post out today that was really quite disgusting. It was a blog post in which the sleazy coal industry, this particular story is from desmogblog.com, desmogblog.com, desmogblog.com. Headline, coal lobby PR firm memo boasts about manipulating Democrats and Republicans. A Virginia-based public relations firm called the Hawthorne Group has sent out a newsletter to their friends and family outlining the work they did on behalf of the Clean campaign. It says the following, quote, "We thought the most fixated of the political and communications junkies might find interesting some highlights of a recent grassroots campaign Hawthorne created and managed for the American Coalition of Clean Electricity. In September 2007, on the key measurement question, do you support, oppose the use of coal to generate electricity, we found 46% support and 50% oppose. In a 2008 year-end survey, that result had shifted to 72% support and 22% oppose. Not only did we see significantly increased support, opposition was cut by more than half. Republican presidential candidate Senator John McCain addresses a crowd wearing clean coal hats in Pennsylvania. Instead of actually demonstrating, this is the writer of the blog writing, instead of actually demonstrating that somehow coal is clean, Hawthorne used age-old PR tactics to create the image instead. Hats and T-shirts. We placed teams in early primary caucus states and key battleground states during the fall general election. We used branding for clean and America's power consistent with our national advertising campaign. The team drove a branded flex fuel minivan to events for added visibility. At each event, we handed out T-shirts and hats with coal or clean and our logo and web URL, as well as literature on our issue to as many event attendees as possible. In the colder months, we also gave out cups of coffee bearing our logo. Disgusting. That's why, you know, drop them a line. I go over to Democratic Underground from time to time, and it has been suggested to me that if you drop a line to site administrators of places where you go and you see these filthy ads, that they might take into account what your concerns. So anytime you see one of those clean ads, drop whoever's running the website a note and say, you know, please stop accepting these things. Please. You're making it harder to do the work that this country has to do. I mean, it's not that complex, is it? I would at least hope not. So there's that. And we are at the end of the second hour of the program. I look forward to hearing from you some more. And coming up, you know, I think we're going to play the I Have a Dream speech. I generally, well, let's, I tell you what, let's do. Let's listen to the I Have a Dream speech here in a little bit. And let's listen to it within the context of that CNN poll whereby two-thirds of the African-American respondents said that King's dream is finalized and realized, with the inauguration of Barack Obama. Could we do that? Let's do that. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We've got a PayPal button. Sure would be nice if you would make use of it as we are halfway through January and not halfway toward our goal. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be right back.
Yeah! down, my life is still time to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
What's this? Keith Olbermann is reporting that as breaking news, Dick Cheney has hurt his back while moving boxes into his new house and has to go to the inaugural in a wheelchair. Pardon the pun or whatever it is, but oh my aching back. There is nothing that this crowd of thugs and liars will not do to try to gin up a little bit more sympathy. Well, see ya. I hurt my back moving boxes. Yeah, like that guy moves boxes. The only box he moves is that little box of native soil from his homeland that he sleeps with every night. Or hangs upside down over, or whatever it is that the evil vampire does. Ugh. And just a reminder, everybody, except me, will be in the chat room tomorrow, Tuesday, a little before noon, to enjoy the inauguration and the swearing in. And you can, of course, get your special inaugural T-shirts at the Horn Store, and you can get there easiest by going to the website and just clicking on Horn Store. We've got two versions, one cheaper than the other, a little bit thinner T-shirt, $11.99, the thicker one, $17.99, their I Survived Bush T-shirts. Texas Takes Village Idiot Off Milk Carton. Heart. Yeah, Gene. Cheney had to have an excuse to be, medicated at the inaugural. Couldn't, because seeing that one go into the White House without a little something-something to sort of help you through the reality of it, it's just a little too much. I hurt my back lifting boxes. Of course, that's almost as funny as when she did her last little bit of lying, White House spokescreep Dana Perineal. Declared, well, I don't think you're going to see any Ryder trucks pulling up or anything. And then the next thing you get is a photograph of a Ryder truck pulling up to the White House. Can't make this stuff up. And from the email box, a note from our pal Renee Louise, known in the chat room as Thunderstone. She says, I cannot agree more with what you and David are discussing, the $1 million plus for the inauguration. Or the $1 million plus. I've been saying this since the Democratic National Convention boondoggle. Unfortunately, I have to jump off right now, but I wanted to express my agreement and disappointment so many people are suffering. What does this say about us as a people? Please thank David for me for bringing it up. Thoughts and love, Renee Louise. P.S. I so agree with David also on the silly story traffic at headonradionetwork.com. And maybe it's a matter of we need a laugh. Maybe that's why the silly story gets stories get the traffic they get. But I have a feeling it will grow. Enjoy the, they're there, and they are capably and admirably moderated. The message boards by our chat room moderator Lottie, who does a great job with it. Jump in and enjoy it. Talk loud, Bob. I need to deal with some kitchen stuff. Oh, God, it's like that Saturday Night Live. Well, no, I won't do it. Garrett Morris screaming the news.
And also from the email inbox. David from Tennessee writing in on the poll. And by the way, I was asked in the chat room, that CNN poll, was it just some sort of a click poll on the website, or was it a real one? It was a real one, opinion research service CNN poll that made that finding that two-thirds of African-Americans believe that the dream is, you know, fulfilled now. David from Tennessee wrote in, subject line, oh my, if black America is so optimistic as to believe that racism is over due to the ascension of Obama, then the awareness that will be available to us all in 2 to 3 years will be of the true cold hamburger variety. Once the awareness sinks in, I fear that expectation, once disappointed, will cause a hard rain to fall and a hard wind to blow. Yep. And, you know, I know there's a lot of optimism running up and down the streets of Washington, D.C. I frankly wish I was already there. I'd love to see the inauguration tomorrow, but that's not how it shook out. I'm just happy to be there for to just sort of soak up a little bit of the buzz. But it's exciting, but I hope it's you know, let's just, come on, let's hang on to a little reality here. We're not getting, what was the joke I forget, it was one of those late night babbleheads. And it had to do with, let me see if I can find it here. Won't take me too long, I hope. Yeah, here it is. Craig Ferguson on The Late Show, I guess Friday night, said, I'm actually surprised Obama has a limousine. I thought he'd go to work on a magical unicorn galloping through traffic. And there is some of that sense. But Letterman, of course, has stayed... Letterman said, happy birthday to Michelle Obama. For her birthday, Barack is getting her a new house. And, you know, talk about dry, biting wit. He also noted Friday, on this date in 1991, the U.S. attacked Iraq. I'm so glad that's all behind us now. Yeah. Yeah. So, Jay Leno noted that as of Friday, now the real pressure is on George Bush. He only has 3 days left to respond to Hurricane Katrina. Funny, but tragic in its own right. And the same thing with this piece from Saturday Night Live. I watched it, and my initial reaction was to giggle at it. I thought it was giggleicious, because it just is. But it's behind laughter. It also hides some dirty, dirty, ugly realities.
Guantanamo Bay. Since 2001, we've been keeping America safe from its enemies. But on Tuesday, January 20th, we're
going out of business.
Hi, I'm CIA field op David L. Skimp. By executive order, Gitmo, the world's largest terrorist detention center, will be closing its barbed wire gates, and that can only mean one thing.
Everything must go.
Hoods, blindfolds, shackles, chains, dog bowls for people. If it's used to humanely detain or interrogate prisoners, we've got it. And we're passing the savings on to you.
Car batteries.
That's right, car batteries, jumper cables, box springs, all slightly used, all for low, low prices. You're going to be shocked at the savings. Polaroid cameras, Polaroid film. You're not going to find a better bargain at any other detention camp. Hey, but don't take it from me. Take it from this Cuban lady.
Mira, I got the jumpsuits. I got 2,000 pairs of the shower slippers. I got the painting of this man.
I don't know him, but he looks like my tío Pepe, so I buy.
Hola. Why torture yourself with high prices? When it comes to deals at Guantanamo Bay, we speak your language. Take a look at this. A wooden board, just $9.99. Jugs of water, just $5.99. German Shepherds, only $1 each. Buy two, get the third one free. Get more bargains, get more savings, get more of everything you need at Gitmo.
Guantanamo Bay, going out of business sale. Fly to a foreign country, then fly to Cuba. Have an old man in a 57 Chevy drive you to the base. When the guards ask for your business, say, Operation Savings.
Tell them David Strelsky I sent you.
Yeah, funny, but not. We've killed people there. Good God. It should be closed and we should leave. And then it should be made a museum, a museum along the lines of Auschwitz. But that's me. Let's see what's happening on the phone lines here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Gerard in Indiana.
Hey, Gerard. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Got a little more packing and getting ready to go but we'll get her done.
Well, that sounds like a good time.
I hope it will be.
I just wanted to kind of weigh in on the question of whether Dr. King's dream has been realized. I would have to disagree. When there's a four-year-old little girl out in Oakland, California tonight who has no father because one of the Bay Area Rapid Transit cops laid her father belly down on the platform and shot him in the back and killed him.
Murdered him. Murdered him.
Black, basically. I would have to say that his dream is not realized, from my point of view. But
as I learned a few weeks back, there are different layers of racism, mm-hmm. And if you think of it as an iceberg, the tip of the iceberg sticking out is individual racism. And that's, babbling idiots who use those hateful words. And then there is institutional racism, and then I guess cultural racism, if I remember, is the cultural stuff is what floats beneath the surface and is so destructive. Just like, there's more iceberg under the water than there is sticking out.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. What you're talking about. In that Oakland instance, and yeah, there's a little girl who doesn't have a daddy, and it's got and racism has its hand in it. But even asking that stupid question, and it is a stupid question as far as I'm concerned, Gerard. CNN was just trying to come up with some feel good data to use during inaugural coverage.
Yeah.
And, of course, the African Americans now believe by a two-thirds margin, a wide majority of black Americans believe that racism is over. So it's over, right? That's the problem with an opinion poll, though, isn't it? It's just that. It is opinion.
Well, it's kind of like medical statistics, You may have a heart condition, and there may be medical statistics about your particular condition, or about people who have your condition, but that doesn't really say anything about you. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I think of the photos of, Jesse Jackson the night of the election in Grant Park. Whatever Jesse Jackson has been or is today, he was there with Dr. King. And, those tears rolling down his cheeks, there's some authenticity there. And I'm sure, there are points in his life where he never thought he would see a day like is going to happen tomorrow. But, there's just, I say this all the time. It's like my mantra. You know, stole it from Mike Malloy. You know, the night that Alito was confirmed by the Senate. You know, we've got 30 more years of organization to do to make up for what's happened over the last 8 and before. You know, since Nixon, really. But, you know, I just started reading a book. It's called The Parting of the Waters, America in the King Years, 1954-63, by a man named Taylor Branch. And I'm just beginning the book, and, you know, comparative, you know, the book starts out in really Depression-era Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to that time, I guess you could say that, you know, a lot of, you know, Dr. King's, the things that they fought for at that time and were fighting for, you might say King's political and institutional predecessors like Marcus Garvey and W.E.B. Du Bois and Roy Wilkins, those kind of people that, you know, they're the kind of institutionalized racism has, we've made some strides, obviously, but I think we still have a long way to go.
There's no way we don't. And you know, that's my only concern is that right wingers will use this as a means of saying, well, see, you know, why don't you liberals just shut up? It's all fixed now. But there are, as usual, where polls are concerned, there are facts behind the facts. Here's the sampling. Here's the sample that went with that poll, Gerard. There are 1,245 adult Americans questioned, including 798 white folks and 332 black folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a telephone survey.
Yeah.
So that number, first of all, you got to ask why the sample was that way. And then you've got to, based on the opinion of 332 African Americans, CNN is comfortable saying that Black America thinks that racism is, that King's dream is fulfilled and his vision is completed. I can't buy that. Because I know too many people who, if they had that question put to them, would, oh, hell no. If you see what I'm saying, because they're people who are working on the front lines of this stuff. And it's appallingly obvious that it's not over and that there is so much more work to be done.
Well, I just, and obviously you have to consider the source. I work in a supermarket, and it happened the other day that, I was walking through the back room of the supermarket. In fact, I had just punched in for work, and I was on my way to go to work. And one of the managers of the store in the back room had the radio, talk radio, going, and happened to have Neil Bortz on.
Oh, dear God, this can't end well.
And he was saying, I just caught this little snippet. You know, I heard it was like the Neil Bortz show, and then this little snippet was, you know, the people, and this is almost a direct quote. He said, the people in this country who are on the lower end of the intelligence scale are the ones who voted for Barack Obama.
Yeah, and see, that's been a theme that the right wing's been working since election night.
Yeah.
See, those people didn't have any business voting in the first place. You know, they betray. I don't know, Gerard, whether or not they understand that they're betraying their racism inherent by saying that kind of garbage.
Yeah, it's like they're trying, they think they're veiling it, but, you know, of course, being one of those people who voted for him, I guess my intelligence is so low, I can't, you know,
Yeah, because voting for a ticket with Sarah Palin on it would have been a real genius move, right?
Yeah, and you're looking, you know, and all these people in the media that are, you know, oh, she's the next best thing for the Republican Party. I said, you have got to be kidding me. You know?
Yeah. And see, that's the part that because, you know, like all the other dishonest wingnut hacks, Neil Bortz closely monitors and closely rides herd on what's going on or going out over his air, because he's not going to let anybody on who can make him look like a fool.
Right.
And so consequently, it comes, and you know, I heard a promo for that little slug the other day as I was driving along. It was yesterday, as a matter of fact, of him talking about how liberals just aren't up to the intellectual task of debating him, and sometimes he lets them, and sometimes I let them on just for entertainment value, but pal, you weren't entertaining, so I'm not going to talk to you. And It's so fundamentally incivil that you have to wonder about the mentality of somebody who listens to that and thinks they're getting something from it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's like this whole it's kind of a faux issue of Ann Coulter being on NBC and then not, and then went on CBS. And it was funny because I watched the Harry Smith, who, in my mind, is not possibly the most penetrating interviewer in the world. But anyway, he basically called her sophomoric. And her reply to that was, oh, if by that you mean funny, then I accept that compliment. You know, it's like, you know, it's like you want to throw a dictionary at him. Look it up. Look up sophomoric, would you please? Oh, it's just beyond words.
Well, you know, Ann Coulter needs to get off the cross. We need the wood.
Oh, jeez.
You know, but then again, she's so damn skinny. You know, she was on a cross, it'd be made of toothpicks. So, oh well, I'm going. Hey, Gerard, good hearing from you, brother, and I hope you get to enjoy the proceedings tomorrow.
Yeah, I do have the day off, so you'll probably see me in the chat room tomorrow. I want to tell you on a personal note that now too that you've got me hooked on Bourdain.
I'm so ashamed of myself. I've missed two straight episodes. Maybe tonight, while I'm finishing up my ironing, I'll get to watch the third episode.
Yeah.
I hear that both the first episode of the new season, Mexico, and the second one, Venice, were just magnificent.
Yeah, I haven't seen those either, but I did enjoy. He did. I mostly see him in reruns because the time that he's on is really not. I'm usually in bed by that time of day. But the one I really enjoyed was where he went back to his old restaurant to actually work on the cook's line again.
Yeah,
and it was nice because I actually used to do that back in the day, so it was very enjoyable. But my wife can't stand it, but that's okay. Well, you have a good day tomorrow, Bob.
All right, you take care, Gerard. Good talking to you. Stay warm.
Okay.
All right, bye. Gerard calling from Indiana, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita. How are you, dear?
Well, I haven't been too long. Got out of the hospital tonight.
Say what?
Well, I just wanted to tell you about my little experience with that, because to me, it's a good reason to change our medical system. You know, if you have any kind of heart problems, they say, call 911 or go to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. Unless the doctor's office is open, but then sometimes if they're real busy, that's what you have to do.
Right.
So I had a little spell the other night, and I wasn't getting better, and it was kind of going up in my throat, and I thought, I'll call EMTs. And so they came on out here, and I was feeling some better when they got here. And first they told me, they said, well, you know, you're an adult and you don't have to go, you know, but said since it spread, just you know, to my throat and all. I said, mm-hmm. probably need to have it checked out. And I said, well, I really don't want to go, but I will. And then they got me in there, and I was starting to feel better, except my head, of course, because they were giving me nitroglycerin.
Yeah, and my dad told me that stuff will just take the top of your skull right off.
Yeah, and especially giving you, like, two or three in a row, you know. But anyway, I said, is it too late for me to back out? I said, no, we can't let you out now. I said, you got to go. And they had me all hooked up. But anyway, I went up there, and I was in the emergency room for quite a while, and I got better. And I thought, well, they'll let me go. And before, I've been in a real worse shape, and I was let go because I got better. And see the way the doctors are down here. I don't know if it's that way everywhere, but you don't have any choice but to go either to the emergency room or to call the ambulance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the emergency room, God only knows how long you're going to have to wait. At least you'll be laying down when you go to an ambulance. But anyway, what I'm thinking is, to me, this is waste. They admitted me, and I told Charles something has changed. You know, there's some kind of policy up here has changed, but I didn't know until the next day, yesterday, the doctor came in that was on call, and I said, can I go home? I'm better. And he said, no. He said, you went to the emergency room with chest pain, and he said, now you're going to have to pay the price, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's standard. You have to have all this blood work done, and then you have to have a stress test.
I've had one.
Yeah, and it's kind of long and involved.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had to wait tonight till the doctor could read it and all, and because they were talking about catheterizing me, and I think, my God, I don't want to do that. And here I'm missing all about the inaugural and all. And I thought, oh, well, but I had a TV up there. But they said, well, everything looked good, you know, and so I could come home. So, like I said, I've only been home maybe an hour. And but to me, that's a waste of time. And my son said they probably are covering their rear end. They probably got in trouble before or something that. Every time, you know.
Well, all of those things are wound up inside something called the standard of care, Juanita, and that is.
But they keep changing the standards of care, don't you know?
Well, yeah, they sure do. But I can't say the stress test or anything along those lines is necessarily a bad thing. The blood work is.
If I hadn't got better, you know.
Yeah. So what did they say? Were you having a heart attack?
They said everything looked good. The stress test looked good.
And that blood enzyme came back
and go home.
And it wasn't elevated. You hadn't had a, well, you know, thank heaven for
No, kids. They didn't say I'd had a heart attack.
But well, mercy, I'm awfully glad to hear that.
I'm just hoping that, you know, things will change. You know, that's just, to me, that's just too much.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I have been in worse shape with that before, and they got me better in the emergency room and sent me home. But I told Charles, I said, something is different this time. And I thought, well, they're going to give me that catheterization, and I thought, I'm going to refuse it.
Now, why?
Because, I mean, I don't think you should just have that as a routine, do you?
No, you have it if it's necessary.
Right.
And if they had seen, you know, if they had seen evidence that you had some sort of a blockage, they probably would have done it.
Well.
But since the stress test and the blood enzymes didn't come back, indicating, they turned you loose.
The only thing
but you don't, that, but Juanita, well, you don't wrong. Fool, you don't fool with that stuff.
I know, but I thought it was a waste. I really did because that's what he said. He said, anytime you go now to the emergency room and you have a chest pain, he said, they're going to admit you and you're going to have all that done. So that's just the way it is now. But I just thought it was such a waste. Well, but anyway.
Knowing you as we do, I suspect you might think it was a waste where you were concerned, but if it was happening to somebody else, you'd say, no, do the test. And that's not a criticism. That's the kind of good spirit that you have.
Well, maybe so. I don't know. But I want to tell you a little experience I had up there. I guess it was last night. I had a TV, and I had something about Obama on, and there was this little older Southern belle, you know, the night nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that on, and she just said to me, she said, what do you think about that? And I thought, oh, brother, I know what to expect. And I just said, well, what do you think about it? And she said, well, I can't say anything. I didn't vote. I just didn't vote. And I said, I repeated something I'd heard that day. I said, well, I think it was divinely ordained. And I said, I think God's given us a second chance. And she said, well, I don't know. And she knew quite a bit about him, but some of it, I don't know whether it was so or not. But
well, she didn't vote. That probably means she only would have been happy if it had been Mike Huckabee. You know, a Huckabee Palin ticket she'd have been out there for.
Maybe but, so, you know, because, you know, I didn't go into too much of detail with her, but I thought, well, I'm going to state my case. And I said, I think we've been through a nightmare the last 8 years. But I thought, well, she knew I was, she could tell I was Southern, you know, you can't hide it.
Right.
Just like she couldn't. And she probably thought we'd just get to talk about how bad he was. Yes, what I figured.
Well,
I didn't.
Right.
I
and if you had
said it out.
If you had said, you know, I can't believe that we elected him, or I know, it's just horrible for this. That's what you would have gotten.
She probably just decided she didn't want either one of them, you know. But I bet you her church was telling her what to do, but I guess she just rebelled and didn't vote for either one of them.
But, yeah, if there had been someone weirder or more fundamentalist, you couldn't have kept her away from the poll.
Yeah,
exactly.
You're probably right about
most that. Importantly, I'm so very glad to know that you're feeling all right.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell you to have a wonderful time tomorrow. I hope everything will go smooth. It looks like it's been going smooth, you know, up there.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard from Guy.
Well, yeah, I produced him today. I had him
for three. Oh, he's on today? Well,
yeah. And he'll be on from 3 to 6 again tomorrow.
He's going to be on 3 to 6?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now what other kind of program are we going to have tomorrow?
Not me. So
yeah,
I'll be.
No, not you.
I'll be a rerun tomorrow and Wednesday. None of us will be on the air on Wednesday. It's all reruns.
Okay. Okay, well, I hope you get to talk to some people.
Well, I sure do, too. I'm really looking forward to it.
You know, listen to what you have to say.
And I, you know, I hope we can get across the idea of the vitality and the validity of liberal media and creating these discussions that we so badly need.
Yeah.
And doing it in a way that doesn't just track after the right wing model. We've got to find new ways of doing things.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well thank you very much, Juanita. Please.
I won't keep you anymore.
Please stay well, and let us know. Make sure we know that everything's
okay.
Well,
I'm pretty fortunate, you know, with the situation. My main problem, my heart beats too fast.
Mm.
You know, that's what I have the problem with. I don't have a diseased heart, thank God. That's what my little friend that died last Christmas.
Oh.
She had a diseased heart, and plus a lot of other things. So I'm blessed that way. But.
Yours just goes too fast.
Hmm?
Yours just beats too hard, beats too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if it gets too far up there, that's when I have to really have trouble.
Well, keep us posted, and we will talk soon.
Okay, and you take care.
All right.
Night-night.
Bye-bye. Juanita calling from Central Florida, and scary business. I'm glad to know she's okay. Unlike all right-wing talkers, I will say when I have been wrong, and I've been wrong. One of the things that I did just notice along the way is that the business of the $150 million for Obama's inauguration got ginned up through the work of the Associated Press. And as Media Matters notes, it's hard to find journalism more shoddy than this.
courtesy of the AP's Matt Apuzzo. And the quote is as follows. The price tag for President-elect Barack Obama's inauguration gala is expected to break records, with some estimates reaching as high as $150 million. Despite the bleak economy, however, Democrats who called on President George W. Bush to be frugal 4 years ago are issuing no such demands now that God, it sounds like Rush Limbaugh just wrote that. And Media Matters asks the question, where does that jaw-dropping number of $150 million come from? The AP never says. It doesn't quote anybody. It doesn't point to any facts. There's no nothing. The AP builds an entire story around how much Obama's inauguration might cost. Why stop at $150 million? Yet never substantiates the what-if estimates. As we said, journalism doesn't get much worse than that. They also noted, unlike AP, ABC News at least tries to substantiate the huge figure the media have been tossing around in terms of the cost of the inauguration. Hint, most of it is for security. But even with ABC's actual reporting, the article still falls short. No context. So it's got to cost something. But in a way, it sort of appears to be a sort of an ex post facto attempt at justifying Bush's soiree 4 years ago by the one going on now. There are other stories out there that talk about the Secret Service's elite. Well, the last time I heard an organization described as elite, they were talking about the Iraqi Republican Guard, but we'll just let that go. The elite Secret Service counter-sniper squad. It's a total security clampdown in Washington, D.C. I've been getting, because I'm going to be riding on it, I've been getting these updates from the Washington Metro via their e-alerts, talking about what's been closed and what hasn't been closed. I got one a little bit ago, about 4 hours ago. The Secret Service has closed the Judiciary Square F Street entrance for the remainder of the night. The 4th Street entrance remains open. And here's the interesting. This early closing was unexpected. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of crazies, like that Hal Turner guy I mentioned a little bit ago, who would like nothing more than to see Barack Obama. Well, I'm not even going to put the word into the universe. But, that guy's out there actually talking about an attack on the attendees to the event. There are dangerous people out there. And, it's the good ones that we lose. It's the John Kennedys. Garfield was a halfway decent president, and they blew him away. And, meanwhile, it's like the Bill Hicks clip that we listened to last night on John's show. All the good ones. Gandhi, murdered. Dr. King, murdered. Jesus Christ, murdered. Ronald Reagan, wounded. Sheesh. And I put that up on Facebook not too long back. How I wish Bill Hicks was still here. What wouldn't you give to hear Bill Hicks's take on the end of George Bush's reign of error? Man. Oh, man. So we've got just about 17 minutes left in the program. Let's take this moment on this King holiday before such a very historic day tomorrow. And while I don't think the I Have a Dream speech is his most profound, it is worth listening to. And let's do that in a minute or two. Here we go.
Here on the Mall in Washington, D.C., and in just a moment, we will bring to you Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. And in just 24 hours, the nation will swear in.
This is that babbling idiot,
of Dr. King's dream.
Solenoid O'Brien from CNN.
By the color of their skin, but the content of their character. And those words echoed from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah, okay, Solenoid. Apparently I clicked the wrong thing. But I'll find it here in a second.
But again, I suggest that we listen to this. And that CNN poll was interesting because, well, okay, here we go.
With you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, languish in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time arise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time. To lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood, now is the time. Make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution, staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners, will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood? I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. One day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. Be able to sing with new meaning My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the crevaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring from the capital. When we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
And let those words stand on their own, with only these additions. Martin Luther King, Jr., Jesse Owens, Jackie Robinson, Sojourner Truth, Booker T. Washington, James Meredith, The Little Rock Nine, Emmett Till, James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwerner, Rosa Parks, Paul Robeson, the Tuskegee Airmen, Medgar Evers, the Freedom Riders, Roy Wilkins, Thurgood Marshall, Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, the Greensboro Four, Cesar Chavez, Frederick Douglass, W.E.B. Du Bois, John Brown, Jack Johnson, Fannie Lou Hamer, Edward James Bevel, Julia Ward Howe, Harriet Tubman, Stokely Carmichael, Julian Bond, Huey Newton, the 1st Rhode Island Regiment, Gabriel Prosser, Colin Powell, Frederick Law Olmsted, Bessie Coleman, Coretta Scott King, John Lewis, James Lawson, Levi Coffin, Nat Turner, Joshua Levitt, Augustus Hawkins, Crispus Attucks, Amistad, The March on Washington, The Pettus Bridge, Dick Gregory, Bill Cosby, Civil Rights Act of 1964, Brown v. Board of Education, Henry Ward Beecher, the Emancipation Proclamation, Abraham Lincoln. He was standing on the shoulders of giants, and he tried to make a place broad enough for us all to stand. I look forward to talking to you again in a couple of days. In the meantime, celebrate what tomorrow is, and tomorrow is a chance, some hope, a fighting chance that we all hope we can get. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold, our chief engineer and IT consultant, respectively. Thanks to Ben Birch, the most overworked man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. Their names will be on my lips, I promise, in the next couple of days. Thank you to all of you who make it possible for the Head On Radio Network to continue doing what we do. It is so important, or at least you seem to think so, and your faith and your trust we hold with reverence. One final note with regard to the speech. And to think the best part of the speech, delivered once King realized there was no crescendo coming back from the crowd, was ad-lib, after once saying, "I have a dream." King faced a wide-eyed throng wanting more, knowing there was a void and feeling the ability to fill it. He did what creative black folks invented in this country, jazz. He improvised. Creativity has no color, only worth. That from our buddy David in Tennessee. So we'll talk soon, and I'll tell Guy you all said hello when I get there tomorrow. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.